of you will have seen by now, FIFA is going ahead, or at least trying to go ahead, with a biennial World Cup that would see the world's biggest tournament happen every 2 years, as opposed to the four-year schedule that we see currently. So today I'm joined by Simon Evans, who is a reporter for Reuters, a football correspondent for them, and of course Kartik Krishnayar, who many of you World Soccer Talk fans will know. Simon, I want to start with you. You were watching a recent press conference with FIFA and Gianni Infantino and Arsene Wenger about the reality and the possibility of a biennial World Cup. So for those of the listeners and viewers that may have missed that, what are the big takeaways that Infantino and Wenger discussed in the possibility of a biennial World Cup in the near future?
So on Monday, FIFA held what they called a global summit with all of the national football federations from around the world. Over 200 of them were on the call. And they went through the feasibility study that they've been talking about for a long time, but haven't actually delivered. And they finally delivered it at this meeting, and it included the key takeaways, I think, for the member associations, which was the financial boost it would give, that basically would bring in the estimated revenue for a 48-team World Cup. The first one of those will, of course, be in North America in 2026. Is I think $7 billion over the four-year cycle with all the rights and the deals, and they believe that going to a biannual one would lift it up above $11 billion. So they're not saying they would double the money, which was something that was being talked about. That, you know, you won't double money by having two tournaments. It's not as simple as that. Business doesn't work like that. But they're saying there will be a significant boost. They would put $3.5 billion into a new fund to develop the game around the world, which would be distributed out to all the different member associations. So you can imagine that during that hearing, that some of the smaller federations from around the world would be, you know, their ears would prick up at that point about the extra cash that they would get from that. So that was the main point that came out on Monday. And that was obviously, you know, something Infantino and FIFA were keen to get across to those federations.
Now, Simon, you talk about the smaller nations. They might see this proposal and say, well, we might have an opportunity to make some more money here. But for the bigger nations, the ones in UEFA and CONMEBOL, what are their reactions to this biennial World Cup?
Well, they're completely against it so far. We've had a very hostile reaction from UEFA. Alexander Seferin, the president of UEFA, has even talked about boycotting any additional World Cup. And, of course, it's not really a World Cup if it doesn't have the European teams there. And CONMEBOL are in a firm alliance at the moment with UEFA on this. And in fact, last week, UEFA came out and said they were looking into a plan to expand the Nations League, UEFA's Nations League, to include South American teams in it, which was really a shot across the bows to FIFA over this. So it is a real battle between Infantino and Seferin, between FIFA and UEFA over this one. And Infantino was able to turn around and say, hey, I have to govern the whole world, not just one part of it. But of course, Seferin is saying that this would damage football globally by undermining its prime product.
And Kartik, what about you? I mean, it kind of seems like we're on the fence right now about we could see a massive divide in the soccer world and we could see a moment of unity perhaps. But CONMEBOL and UEFA, they seem, as Simon mentions, very much against this biennial World Cup. For you, where do you see this going? And I know FIFA has their plans, and CONMEBOL and UEFA have their plans. So in the near future, say both sides want to go ahead with their own ideas, what could this mean for the soccer world as a whole?
Well, commercially, the World Cup is not a viable property globally without European and South American nations participating, particularly European nations, right? Commercially, those are the two confederations, those are the two continents which have won every World Cup, are the most recognized international brands. So it really puts a chink in the kind of plans that FIFA has. Now, FIFA has known for a long time this battle, and Simon's been reporting on this for 7 or 8 years now. This kind of battle with UEFA even began when Infantino was at UEFA. And it's really expanded. That's a great irony when you think about it, but really expanded since Infantino became the president of FIFA and has, I would say, realigned the commercial partnerships of FIFA to where you have very few sponsors from Western Europe. You have, Adidas, I think, is the only one left, the only remaining sponsor from Western Europe. You have no sponsors from South America. And you have now presenting sponsors of of FIFA competitions that are largely Asian, Middle Eastern, or American companies. And you see the direction which Infantino has taken FIFA is not only in a direction which placates small nations who control the voting power in FIFA and got him elected. So small nations like Montserrat has as much of a voting power in FIFA as Germany does, right? Papua New Guinea has as much of a voting power in FIFA as Brazil does, but also to the commercial powers behind FIFA now, which are namely China, South Korea, the Gulf states, Russia, and the United States. So I think that a lot of this has to do with commercial considerations as to maybe the desires of those emerging nations, if you want to call them emerging football nations, large economic powers versus the traditional powers in this sport in Western Europe and in South America.
Simon, a word we've been throwing around a lot is commercial and the possible revenues for FIFA, but outside of money, is there any potential gain that FIFA sees here in a biennial World Cup?
Well, if you listen to Arsene Wenger, his whole pitch is that this is about developing opportunities for the game, giving more chances to compete and watch the World Cup to people from the parts of the world Kartik was just talking about that have the increasingly commercial influence over FIFA. This is part of the overall review of the international match calendar. So they're talking about women's soccer as well. They're talking about youth competitions and increasing those and so on. The problem a little bit with the argument, and I raised this in one of the press sessions we had with Arsene Wenger when he made his presentation, is that holding a World Cup more frequently doesn't necessarily broaden the base of countries that will participate in it significantly, because most of the countries who would qualify for a World Cup in 2026 are going to be there again if you had it in 2028. So if the argument from a development point of view, I don't think is a particularly strong one. I think they're on stronger ground when they talk about if we don't do these tournaments, other things happen anyway. This has been one of the pushbacks to when people talk about the schedule getting too crowded and players needing rest. They're saying, look, we're building in a mandatory rest period. And look what happens when we don't have major tournaments. The clubs go off on tours to Asia and North America anyway. Again, you know, that would have to have an asterisk next to it, because when those teams go, as American fans know very well, and they come over and play exhibition games in the summer, it isn't their strongest team and they're not playing at 100%. It's nothing like playing in a World Cup in terms of the strain that there would be on the players. So they're arguing that they're spreading the game around and giving more opportunity. I mean, technically, it is more opportunity if there are more World Cups. But there are other ways they could do that that would be far more beneficial from a development point of view, but wouldn't have anywhere near the commercial appeal. For example, you could have a B World Cup. You could have the next 48 teams who didn't qualify for the World Cup play in a tournament somewhere and develop the game. You could have, you know, Vietnam versus Northern Ireland or something like that, you know, in those games. That would be developing the game. That would be increasing opportunities, but it wouldn't have any kind of commercial appeal. So I think what we got down to on Monday was the heart of the matter, which is it is a commercial proposition.
Kartik, something that I think is kind of flying under the radar right now is the players themselves. So we've already talked about the number of games that these players are playing, and Simon mentioned that this is a total rescheduling or at least a revisit to the international calendar. But, you know, the players, a lot of them, generally speaking, the best ones are in UEFA, or they're playing in South America. So obviously those federations are going to have a say as to what happens with the club schedule. And obviously that's going to impact what happens with the players at the international level. So what does this mean for players going forward, you think?
Yes. So actually one other alternative I throw out there to the ones that Simon mentioned is the idea of a global nations league, which is something that maybe UEFA is already on the way to proposing that with CONMEBOL participation. That would actually be something that I think would be more beneficial in existing international windows if you want to create a competition that includes more countries and involves more of a opportunity for nations that are not qualifying for the World Cup and increases development funds, et cetera, raises some commercial revenue. Not quite frankly, not on the level that another World Cup, a biennial World Cup would, but I think that's another possibility. In terms of players, this is a bad proposition. Now, Wenger in his proposals has talked about reshifting the calendar in the way that you take care of players, or at least ostensibly, that's the theory. You take care of players in that you have a block of club football uninterrupted, and then a block of internationals uninterrupted, and not the constant international breaks and back and forth, and players getting on airplanes, which creates strain, traveling, which creates strain. We saw in this COVID era the complication that creates when players come back from South America or come back from Africa, come back to the UK or Italy or Germany and have to quarantine, right? So that's been another factor. But the strain on players is getting worse and worse. We're seeing more injuries. We're seeing more nagging injuries. I've observed in the last few weeks, we've seen more guys subbed out in the first 20 minutes of Premier League matches than I ever remember. Guys getting hurt in the eighth minute and being subbed off. Guys getting Jack Harrison the other day for Leeds, among others, right? He went off in the 16th minute. There was an injury to Johnny Evans in the sixth minute for Leicester the week before. And I should be tracking this. I mean, I've kind of anecdotally seen six or seven guys subbed off in the first 20 minutes of matches in the Premier League in the last three match days, the last 2 weeks. So there is a increasing strain on players coming from COVID-19, which compressed the schedule, and the constant international breaks and flying off and representing your national teams. And this decision by FIFA to pack three international match days, or by also the confederations, to pack in three international match days in one window. So you have guys who are playing every 4 days at the club level, traveling, and then playing every 3 days at the international level. And inherent in the international game is travel within that period. So player welfare is an overriding consideration, and this is not going to help it in spite of what FIFA claims.
Simon, I have one last question for you, and it relates to, at least kind of in a way, the fans' interpretation of what this means. And Gianni Infantino has said repeatedly that his surveys and FIFA surveys have shown that many people support a biennial World Cup just because it means that there's more games and more competitions. But I think, at least for me, when I look on social media and look at other people, the general consensus seems to be that people are against this idea. And surely a lot of that's because people on social media are generally speaking from Europe and North America and South America, at least the ones that I'm seeing. But I'm curious as to what your thoughts are on the fans' appreciation or disappreciation of a biennial World Cup.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, FIFA put out a survey last week of fan opinion around the world, which did show that difference that you were suggesting there between the people in the, you know, let's call it the developed soccer markets and people in emerging soccer markets. I think India was the country actually that they highlighted had the most support for having a biennial World Cup. And I'm not going to go into the whole methodology debate about that research or the whole question about various research about economics and opinion and so on that comes out that always seems to back up the position of the organization that's commissioning it. We'll leave that aside. I can totally believe the argument that there are fans in Asia and the Middle East and in Africa, and no doubt in some parts of Europe, who would like the idea of it because it's great TV. Yeah. I mean, if you're consuming this sport primarily, and this is where you really get into the whole discussion about the development of the game. But if you're consuming this sport primarily as a televised product, because you don't have a powerful national league with players you want to go and watch every week, or you do go and watch that, but the real excitement for you is watching on television, then having the World Cup every 2 years for a month's entertainment during a summer, I can see why that appeals to people. Absolutely. Now, in Europe, people are saying we've got too much soccer on TV. It's nonstop. It's every night. We've got cup competitions. We've got Champions League expanding. We've got a bigger group stage for that. We've got a new Conference League as well as a Europa League. I can totally understand why people in Europe would say, like, whoa, you know, I like watching cricket in summer. I like watching tennis. I like watching golf. I want a break from this constant wall-to-wall soccer on television. So I think that those fans are looking at it from a very, very different perspective. And fundamentally, that gets to the heart of this whole issue. When we're talking about development, opportunity, the commercial aspect that Kartik highlighted about where these sponsors are coming from, there's the interests within the game are becoming more and more divergent. It's no longer a case of Europe sending out coaches to developing countries and trying to spread the game to them. No, the game's already been spread, and it's developing in a very different way in different parts of the world. And Gianni Infantino, as FIFA president, is well aware of that. He's also aware that politically, and this is an important point that we haven't really touched upon, but politically, he can't lose from this situation, because if he gets this World Cup, extra World Cup through, and he gets the revenue that he then is able to distribute to developing countries' football associations, they'll love him for it. They're going to vote for him again. If he doesn't, and he can turn around and say, it's the rich, privileged guys in Europe who've done this to you. They didn't give you the extra resources. Don't ever let them be in charge of FIFA. You better keep voting for me. He also wins.
Yeah, Kartik, I want to take Simon's points, make it a little more localized. You could say the U.S. is a developed nation, sure, but they're still an emerging soccer market. It's one of the fastest growing sports here in the country. So we did reach out to U.S. Soccer to see what their stance was on the matter, and they did not have a comment. Perhaps they wanted to gather their own information on FIFA surveys. But for you, what does it mean to have U.S. Soccer not having any comment? And we've seen CONCACAF be a little more, you know, accepting, maybe a little more lenient to that idea, especially compared to CONMEBOL and UEFA. So looking at U.S. Soccer and the sport here in North America, what does it mean for a biennial World Cup?
Well, CONCACAF will benefit from it because there are umpteen number of less developed football nations in CONCACAF, and a great voting block, and a voting block that Gianni Infantino is particularly cognizant of and has been very, very accepting of, and done things in terms of football development grants and other things, even on a higher order than Sepp Blatter, who was very close. We know about Sepp Blatter's history with CONCACAF, right? That's been well documented, but even on a higher order. In terms of U.S. soccer, we got no comment from them, obviously, but Major League Soccer, which is the dominant presence in terms of the politics of the U.S. Soccer Federation and in terms of kind of the media narrative in the United States, Don Garber has made it clear that he's not really a fan of this idea, and that it would be disruptive to Major League Soccer, who, of course, you know, part of the issue with MLS is MLS operates on a different calendar, which we've talked about. We talked about in the previous video that we did, and that's another complication if you're going to go into this kind of universal set block of club game matches and then block of international matches. I don't think the U.S. and Mexico, those two countries, and probably Canada as well, the three North American nations, the three nations that are part of the North NAM block of CONCACAF, which is an acronym for three different regions that are part of a single confederation. I don't think those three countries are going to be favorable towards this idea. However, the bulk of CONCACAF will be because, as Simon mentioned, you're talking about 11 billion over a four-year cycle versus seven. So that's a lot more development money, a lot more in development grants, and also opportunity for the vast majority of CONCACAF nations. And CONCACAF has the second largest voting block in UEFA, in FIFA behind the Asian Confederation. So I think that this region is on balance, the football governing authorities in this region are in favor of a biennial World Cup. Now the U.S., I think, is probably not in favor of it, in spite of that no comment, but they don't hold the sway in this region.
I think it's a good place to wrap up right there. So I want to thank you, Simon and Kartik. Make sure to check out Simon's information. He can be found on Twitter, as I mentioned before, a football correspondent for Reuters. And obviously, Kartik is always on Twitter, a frequent guest on the World Soccer Talk podcast, as many of you know. So Simon, thank you. And Kartik, thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Cheers, Cal.
Cheers.